It's gadgets with Fevzi Turkalp, the gadget detective. Don't forget, you can always subscribe for free to his podcasts. Gadgetdetective.com is the place to go to do that. Or you can listen in pretty much all the ways that you listen to other podcasts. How are you doing, Fevzi?
Very, very, very well, Bill.
That three varies. That is well. I'm very well as well. Thank you. We'll get on to your gadgets of the week in a moment, but we start with the tech story, and it's one of those where our head hurts because we have to imagine what for some of us is still a very unimaginable future, but it's sort of security in the years to come, basically, isn't it?
Yeah. So we've talked in the past on here about the thing that at the moment is called the metaverse. I'm sure it will have a different name in due course, but it's this idea that the internet will become something different to what it is now. At the moment, we interact with the internet by looking through little glass screens, be it on our tablets or phones or sometimes laptops. Mm-hmm. And in the future, it will be a far more immersive experience where you are represented in a virtual reality environment by a 3D avatar, a 3D representation of you in this digital space where you can interact with other avatars, other representations of people. And I've mentioned before how I thought that this was Tiger Country, how companies were throwing huge sums of money into the development of this environment, which would be proprietary, which they would own. And it gives rise to questions of rights, crime, jurisdiction, and so forth. Yes. So it was very interesting that 12 hours ago, a story broke that Interpol, which is the global police agency that is the glue that allows national police agencies to work together. Interpol is working out now how they may be able to police the metaverse in the future. And it's quite interesting. They've built their own 3D virtual reality space and they're getting used to being in it and starting to try and figure out what sort of crimes could be committed. And we already know that there are crimes being committed in virtual environments. last year, the BBC identified issues surrounding verbal and sexual harassment within virtual reality games. Mm-hmm. And campaigners last year claimed that the avatar of a 21-year-old researcher was sexually assaulted inside a virtual space. And what's most interesting, I guess, about this is Interpol is law enforcement. Implicit in the term law enforcement is that there are laws. There are laws that pertain
very
to these
good point.
Crimes.
Yes.
Because the definitions on every statute around the world of rape and sexual assault kind of assume someone is physically present.
Yes.
And those laws need to be changed and updated. We don't have to know the precise details of how the metaverse will work to reword our laws, at least to be ready, and then we can tweak them further as we learn more and as the situation develops. But at the moment, theft of objects in a virtual space, assaults and so forth, it's not at all clear whether the existing laws will cover those things. We know that we can cover things like hate speech because we're used to that on social media, and there are attempts at dealing with that, imperfect though they are. But the thing about technology, Bill, is it's very interesting how innovative criminals are when there is a profit motive. They are the first to jump on the bandwagon to actually push a technology to its limits. And at best, what we have is a game of cat and mouse between law enforcement and criminals. But at the moment, what we have is a game of mouse and mouse and mouse, and the cat hasn't turned up yet. So I do worry, but hats off to Interpol, who are working out how to enforce laws that don't yet exist in a space that doesn't yet exist. Yeah. But that's exactly what they should be doing. But our legislators need to wake up and start to think about the legislation. And there is an opportunity. We're having a bonfire of laws in this country shortly, apparently. Some of those could be replaced by laws that are more forward-looking.
I'm wondering whether some people listening to this will be saying at their radio, and honestly, I don't know what I think about this, so I'm not taking any stance on this, whether they will even accept the fact that if your avatar is punched in the face by somebody else's avatar, but your own face remains perfectly fine, whether that does constitute a crime and should be treated as such. Will that be an issue? Or will we all accept, pretty much all accept that the modern world is just different to how it's ever been before, and therefore we must move with it?
I think there are already disagreements about what should be illegal in quotes, the real world, right? And some people think that certain types of speech should be held to be a criminal offence. Other people, you know, say, well, it's, you know, it's free speech.
Yes.
And so we have that disagreement already. And I would just say that, you know, you mentioned being punched in the face. If you think about things like domestic violence, a large component of domestic violence, sometimes the only component of domestic violence, is psychological.
Yes,
the psychological violence that we do to each other, it is the control, it is the belittling of the partner to make them feel worthless and powerless. And then this is why, you know, men can become victims of domestic violence from women. It doesn't necessarily require physical superiority. So I think that some people will think, you know, it's all hokum. But if you are a victim of crime in that space, if you've worked for months and years to build up assets within a virtual space and then they are taken from you, that is theft. I mean, money has ceased to be, you know, money was virtualized years ago. I mean, as soon as you had on your banknote, I promised to pay the bearer, and it was no longer a piece of gold that you were giving over, but a promissory note. And then those promissory notes in turn became digits within a computer that could be moved around the world.
Good point.
Money is already virtualized. We just need to take a further leap of the imagination and just think about where we're going with this.
Yes.
I still think that there is also the other problem, not just third parties committing crimes, but the fact that these are proprietary spaces owned. So it's not like, you know, You do something in the UK, you set up a business in the UK, but you're subject to UK law. What is even the applicable law when you have a global company setting up a metaverse with servers all over the world? It's not clear even which countries' laws would have jurisdiction.
Well, all I can say is, normally I say, I hope when these politicians are trying to legislate about this, they've got a team of people like you there.
I
suspect they don't. So now I'm going to say, I hope Interpol have hired various consultants and that they are real ones, not just, you know, somebody who's got the gift of the gab and has bought a smart suit. People like you to help them wade through this incredibly complicated business.
You know, you know, I'm just a tech journalist. I know enough to know what the questions that we should be asking are, at least some of them, and the fact that there are questions to be asked and answered. That's the start. But there are no easy answers to this. You know, it's literally a new frontier.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we think about cowboys and you know, in the West, the Wild West and all that. But this is much wilder than that because we're making it ourselves.
You join us halfway through our regular weekly catch-up with the gadget detective, Fevzi Turkalp, and on to the gadgets, starting with a synthesizer, an analogue mono synthesizer. How come?
Yeah, because it's kind of retro chic, and actually mono synths are great. Bass lines, for example, are always mono.
You
don't have chords in bass lines, generally speaking.
No, you don't.
So this is a synthesizer called the Moog, and I kid you not, the Moog Mavis.
which is also very retro. That's marvellous.
I do like it. I don't know why, but I just think of Curlers and Coronation Street and things like
gossiping
that.
Gossiping over the fence, yes.
Yeah. Now you make me think of Les Dawson, but never mind. So, first of all, a little bit of history. Moog, which is spelled M-O-O-G. Unfortunately, a lot of English people pronounce that Moog, as it was written.
I didn't know that was wrong either. I've been saying Moog all my life, and I'm a broadcaster.
Because it's named after the founder of Moog synthesizers, which was a guy called Robert Arthur Moog. Excellent, innovative man, was an engineer, but started to make synthesizers in the 60s. Uh-huh. And you may not need to be a synthesizer aficionado, but there is a certain Moog sound, their filter. So the way a synthesizer, you know, one of these analog synthesizers works is you get an oscillator that makes a wave. It can be a sine wave or a square wave or a triangular wave. And then we alter the wave using envelopes which shape the wave. And we use filters which change what frequencies are allowed through as the wave progresses. So that's why you get that sort of squelchy sound that's sort of associated with a lot of sort of traditional synthesizers. Mm. And the Moog synthesizers are particularly famous for their filter. The filter has a certain character to it that makes us happy.
Yes, if people don't know the sound, and of course you can't really describe the sound in words, but if you remember Chicory Tip's huge number one, Son of My Father, that has a very prominent Moog synthesizer right from the start. That song. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to share a few bits with you from this. So the Moog Mavis is unusual. First of all, Moog synthesizers, the hardware versions, because actually Moog has been very progressive, although Robert Moog has, since deceased. Mm-hmm. They carry on and they continue to make new hardware synthesizers, but they also make software ones, which are available on, for example, iPads and iPhones and things like that, which are amazing things that are cheap as chips for what they do. I mean, literally, a few pounds. To replace hardware. So that's one thing, but people will know that the genuine hardware articles still has a certain uniqueness to it. But Moog synthesizers, the hardware ones, are not cheap. They start in the thousands and go up. And I imagine that they have been the cause of more than one divorce.
Yes. As it was never the wife that had the Moog, was it? No. Well, it's us lot.
Do you know what? There have been some really important female synthesizer pioneers, including the Doctor Who theme. Yes. From the original Doctor Who theme, which debuted in 1963. To my shame,
what
I can't remember her name.
Yeah, I know you mean.
It wasn't Derbyshire, was it?
I think it was. I'm going to check that for you.
Yeah. So she was instrumental, and there have been other female pioneers. It's an area which is kind of interesting because it's this where...
Delia Derbyshire.
Yeah,
well done.
Yeah. So and she's written books. You should, go and find them. There's an amazing woman, And there's actually black and white interviews of her speaking about how she helped. She worked with one other person, I think, but how they helped create the Doctor Who theme. And this was at a time when there weren't really synthesizers around as such. This was 1963. They used boxes that were oscillators, these waveform producers, and then they'd use other electronics. It wasn't like, these neat electronics with a keyboard in front of them. It was very different back in the day. The Doctor would have been proud, quite frankly. Yeah. But anyway, Moog synthesizers, notoriously expensive. Good value for what they are, but certainly not cheap. This one came out, and first of all, it comes in kit form. It's a small mono synth. So a mono synth, it means that it can play one note at a time, mm-hmm. which is not as limiting as you might think. And often these are used as, I call these sorts of synths gateway drugs. Because you buy this and then you think, oh, okay, now I can connect, because they're very interconnectable. And in fact, one of the things that you can do with this is you can actually put it in a Eurorack casing, which means it can be part of a big modular setup. But anyway, the point being, it's an analog synthesizer, so that's a traditional sound of synthesizers where you get these sort of fat, squelchy, brassy type noises, not the sort of very delicate digital sounds that sound a bit brittle often to my ears. So it does that. It's a semi-modular analog synthesizer. It can go in a Eurorack module, as I've said. You build it yourself. The list price on it, I think, is about £350, which, whilst not cheap for a Moog, is extremely cheap. But I've noticed recently, because this has been out for a few months now, you can pick them up brand new for £275. And although it is in kit form, no soldering iron is required, you can actually assemble it in less than an hour. And it's really, it's just amazing fun to put together. It's this sort of thing that I wish I'd had when I was a child. When I was a child, I used to disassemble everything in the house to see how it worked, including our old Danset record player, which sort of ages me.
That must have made you popular, I imagine.
My parents were amazingly tolerant people. Considering, because yeah. I'd take things apart to see how they worked, and I'd learn, but I didn't have the, I was a small child, I didn't have the skills to reassemble.
To put it back again.
No, nor the tools. But this is the sort of thing that can actually trigger, this is not just for children, but this is the sort of thing that can trigger a child or a teenager's imagination and actually change the course of their entire life, just like having your first computer or whatever. It's a bit like Raspberry Pi technology in that way, but the sound is amazing. I wanted to see if I could actually here we go.
Let's give us a burst.
I don't know if this is going to work. Let's
take us back to the Chicory Tip days. We hope.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to. Hold on, here we go. We'll get it. Hold on.
Yeah, I'll hold on. Hold on as long as you like.
Okay, be patient, Bill.
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
Always.
Okay, yes. Oh, my goodness. Well, it's not...
Mind you, there are limits.
There we go.
Ah. Oh, lovely. Oh, yes.
Oops. In fact, that does sound a little bit Doctor Who-ish to me.
Yeah.
And then you've got...
That is gloriously of its time. Yeah. Oh, love it.
Now that, that's straight out of the Yazoo Depeche Mode playbook to my ears.
Yeah. Or so, or a very posh BBC voice saying, this is BBC so-and-so, reported from the, needs one of those voices over the top from like the early 70s when we still had posh people on the radio.
Indeed. So this is an amazing thing. You can buy it for £275.
Right.
You will now be an owner of a Moog synthesizer, which is a bit like owning a Rolls Royce when it comes to synthesizers. And it's not cheap. £275 is still not nothing. But compared to what you would pay for any other Moog synthesizer, it's a right bargain. 4 stars. It's got that classic Moog sound, that filter sound. It's also got something that I don't think has appeared in a Moog synthesizer before, which is a wave folder. So imagine you've got something like a triangular wave, and then a wave folder takes the extreme bits, the pointy bits of the wave, and it folds them back down in on itself, and it gives you a very harmonically rich sound, which... is again amazing that they've put something so innovative in what is essentially their cheapest product. So
very good.
Good for them. That's the Moog Mavis 4 stars.
You will be unsurprised to hear that we have to leave your speakers to another day. But hasn't it been fun?
Oh, I loved it.
Thank you for the farty sounds. It was just great. Fevzi Turkout back next week at the same time. Don't forget you can follow him on Twitter. In the meantime, he is @GadgetDetective.